All right. So, is this all plugged in? Okay. You can hear me okay?
You're a little fuzzy. Can you try again?
Okay. How's that? Can you hear me now?
That's a little better.
Okay.
Oh gosh. It's so hard to do this thing remotely.
It's incredibly difficult to, not be, you know, with all of our creature comforts in the studio.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Especially with you all the way in Austin.
No kidding.
Not flying you out during the corona.
Well, you know, it's not for lack of money. it's just that things are very, very hectic at the airport. And, you know, it's like in this situation when people talk about, you know, only doing things that are socially necessary and the rules changing so drastically from one area to another, you know, like mm-hmm. there's like a complete lockdown in San Francisco, apparently.
Yeah, they're taking it to the next level. Good for them.
I believe the next level is called Phase 5. right? No, I think that's it. They use like a staged phasing situation.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's one thing. It's so, you know, and it's not that, well, certainly we know that from our many listeners in power that, you know, the talking show is considered pretty much an essential service.
Yeah, socially necessary.
Socially mm-hmm. necessary. But at the same time, you know, there was concern for my own health going through the airport over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was also concern, obviously, for the situation at Kaechung. And then I personally just couldn't be sure, you know, like if I go to Los Angeles and then Austin goes on, you know, complete lockdown or something like that, and I have to spend 14
right.
days in quarantine near the airport or something like that on return or something, or some, you know, if the situation changes, then the situation has really radically, you know, it's one of those things that I just, you
isn't,
know, I think
isn't that kind of your plight this year anyway, quarantined near the airport?
Yeah. Yeah, that is actually very true. That is pretty much where we do actually live in Austin, not far from the airport. Largely in quarantine. So, but let's do the intro.
Okay.
Since now that everything seems to be working okay, right? You tapes rolling on your end. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I mean, I gotta be honest. I have Gunter here. He's in a hazmat suit, but he's here running the whole thing for me. So it's,
oh wow,
no trouble on my end.
Must be nice. Well, I think I've got
like
it all set up. Okay.
Like you said, Kaechung is not lacking in funding.
No, it's not for lack of funding. It's true. Did he install like a negative pressure thing on your house, a positive pressure thing on your house? Did that happen?
Yep. Yeah, that's all in place. I mean,
oh, that's cool.
I'm just glad the talking show signed up when they had that program a couple years ago to really outfit all of the off-campus studios. So many DJs thought, well, I'll never need that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. There will never be a pandemic. Evan's
right.
like, no, I'll be fine. If there's a pandemic, I won't do my radio show. And we were like,
fools.
No, we'll do the radio show. That's what we said.
That makes me think when you were saying that San Francisco's in Phase 5, have you come across any Star Trek episodes about epidemics, intergalactic epidemics? Or is it their healthcare is just so advanced that it's not even an issue?
There are some, right? There's like, there's the one where on Voyager, because like, oh, the typical excuse, first of all, for why it doesn't happen often to at all is because they have like, you know, everyone is just sort of like stripped of their microbiome when they go through the transporter.
That's true.
But then I think each series has one like scary disease gets through, or like weird thing mutates, or like thing grows and launches spores, you know, inside the mess hall. There's one where down on the planet, Tom Paris, this is Voyager, and Catherine Janeway catch this thing that turned them into lizards. And they go through this.
How is Voyager, by the way?
Voyager is no Deep Space Nine. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
It's okay. Every now and again, there's like a real good episode. They've perfected this thing that I think is now becoming part of the Picard show, which is emo Borg.
Emo Borg?
Yeah. Yeah. So like the Borg, the famous antagonist species. Right. But then like emotional about being a Borg.
Yeah. Generally feelingless.
Yeah, right, exactly. So it's like emo Borg is like kind of you know, it's obviously a fun thought experiment for the writers of the show. They're like, what if Borg but emo?
What if termites had feelings?
Yeah, exactly. So it's like one of those things where you see how they got there. You see the thought process at work. I don't know. I feel very so. You know what's nice about it is that it is entirely regular Star Trek.
Hmm.
So you know how, I don't know if you're watching Picard or Voyager or any of the new Star Trek, but it all very much corresponds to sort of prestige television. You know, one thing leads to another. The events of the last episode inexorably change the events of the current episode, even if they can't help being like, you know, a little goofier or whatever. And then with Picard especially, there's a parade of nostalgia. You know, they have Diana Troy and Commander Riker, you know, on the last episode, for example. They're back.
So here's what I wonder about those return appearances. Do you think like within like the social community of actors that are in those shows, is that seen as like career failure? Like, oh, you couldn't get another gig. You're back on a Star Trek show for like, you know, like as long as the ratings last, which could be in perpetuity.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it would be hard to say that Patrick Stewart's career failed, because although he is tied, you know, like, who's that guy tied to the rock with the eagle eating his liver all day and it grows back every night? Prometheus.
Oh.
Because he's tied like Prometheus to a rock that is being Picard, you know, he still had quite a career.
Oh, yeah. He's done many things. But like the woman who plays Diana Troy,
has never been anything else. Yeah.
Or the guy who plays Worf.
Would you recognize him?
Maybe not. Maybe he's in everything. Maybe he's just like, I don't know. Maybe he's Brad Pitt. I don't know.
So I, like for example, actually, I saw there was this movie that's a release was just postponed. First Cow, features the actor who played Odo.
Wow.
Presumably just playing like an old timey American settler, you know, like just being an actor, you know, not playing a sentient, shape-shifting slime creature. But you know, I think it's one of those things where in some cases some of these actors have had such rich TV careers before and after anyway, you know, right. Like that, like maybe Star Trek was the peak if you consider it against everything else. Like I've seen the actress who plays Janeway, Kate Mulgrew, on like four episodes of Murder, She Wrote.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, if you're like a frequent guest on sort of regular big TV in the early to mid 80s, and then you get like a regular series gig, you know, in the early 90s or in the mid 90s, you're kind of like, I made it. You know, like, I don't think you might not be looking for anything else. You know, you might not be,
right, because when you were guesting on Murder, She Wrote, you were probably also waiting tables or something like that.
Or probably things are pretty good if you're getting at least those kind of, you know, if they're like major antagonists or whatever, but you're not like, you know, if you killed the person and Angela Lansbury finds out about you, you know, you're probably doing okay. You're probably also on General Hospital sometime. You know, you're probably on like four or five shows, you know, sometimes. So you're probably doing all right, but you know, like you definitely probably don't have other jobs too much of the time, you know, at least in the 80s, I'd imagine. But then you're also like not above doing the odd commercial. You know, you're probably not, you're probably really glad to get to be, you know, Deanna Troi.
Right. Or Shakespeare like, in the Park and Telluride.
Yeah. And, or like, for example, what's his name? Riker, Jonathan Frakes, getting to be like that, had that like unsolved mysteries show.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know, or like, and like Geordi LaForge got to do Reading Rainbow the entire time he was on, you know, so he was like playing, dipping in two pots. He was like, I'm on the successful space drama and I'm also a children's entertainer, you know?
Right.
And at that point, I mean, he's probably really busy, you know, like when, you know, when you meet up with other artists and they're trying to act like life is going real swell. I'm like, you know, yeah, just working so much, just so busy flying around, you know, all of this now canceled, but previously, you know, like the way people would talk about it, you'd be like, oh yeah, real busy doing lots of shows, getting lots of work done.
Yeah.
And now, but, you know, if you ran into, LeVar Burton, you know, in like 1992, like he could genuinely just be like, yeah, I got two regular shows on, like working all the time. You know, love
Take
doing
a look.
Reading.
It's in a book. It's
I love reading doing Reading Rainbow. Rainbow. You know, I love doing LaForge. It's great. And you know, I don't know. I mean, so in some cases it might be like the greatest thing. I know that the guy who plays Tuvok, for example, he's like a second generation Trekkie.
Oh, wow.
Like his dad was into Star Trek. And so when
the one
he,
in the '60s,
yeah, exactly. Like I think, and so, you know, he felt inspired by like Uhuru being like, you know, not a, like a, by the sort of diversity of Star Trek, Uhuru and Sulu and everyone. And so he was, you know, he was just stoked to be on Star Trek.
And did I ever tell you,
yeah,
did I ever tell you about the couple that, Eva Spinelli introduced Jeffrey and I to?
I don't think so.
So there's this older gay couple who lives in Palm Springs, and they actually live separately, these two older gay men.
Oh, that's great. That's like the dream.
Yeah, in part because one of them insists that everything in his interior space should be black.
Nice.
Like all furniture, all surfaces, and the other one finds that a little oppressive.
Sure.
So they just... And apparently they're very wealthy, so they just...
And they can afford this, yeah.
So they have houses near each other. One of them has, like, his cheeks pierced. Remember when that was a thing?
Yeah.
But he has the things removed, so Eva said when he first met him, he would inhale his cigarette in his mouth and then blow it out of those holes in his cheeks.
Oh, wow. How does he eat soup?
Sorry?
How does he eat soup?
Very carefully.
Okay, yeah.
The same way porcupines kiss. But apparently Evis met them when he was, you know, working at luxury goods stores, because they had a store in Hollywood. They're German, by the way. They had a store in Hollywood called Captain Uhura, or how do you say her name?
Uhura, yeah.
Uhura. They had a store called Captain Uhura, and when they asked about their fascination with Captain Uhura, they just thought it was so cool that she's always working.
Wow.
They're like, yeah, everyone else on the show is just messing around. She is always working.
And then, oh boy.
This was a big inspiration for me. Apparently they like, you know, carried like Rick Owens and really fancy clothes.
Sure.
But they had a very tall space, say 20, 25 feet tall, and they hung all the garments from the ceiling and had these long dowels with hooks at the end. So if you wanted to see something, they have to like bring it down from, you can only see garments from below.
That's wild.
At Captain Uhura concept fashion store.
That's amazing. And just because she was always working.
Yeah. She's just so productive. Cause she's standing behind her console the whole time. Right.
Yeah. Generally she's like pretty much always. Yeah, it's true. She doesn't move around very much.
Yeah. yeah, so they were just like, her only role is labor. They thought that was so fantastic.
That's amazing that's what they liked about it. So we've gotten on a bit of a tangent here. We should introduce the show.
Okay. So, good evening, everyone. You are listening to The Talking Show.
The Talking Show.
Radio, Chinatown's only...
Only.
Micro-broadcasting radio station.
And it's March 18th.
March 18th. And let's get straight to it, Steve. Why don't you introduce our guest?
Well, we are practicing social distancing. And so, you know, we're not in the same studio. As mentioned earlier, we're not in the same studio as each other. And I suppose we could do this three-way with someone else at their house. Yeah. And maybe we'll get adventurous that way, depending on how long this thing goes on for. But given that getting around is hard, you know, and maybe unsafe moving about the city, we thought it was unfair to sort of ask guests to break isolation and
right.
come to either of us. So this is it, folks. This is The Talking Show. I'm Steve Cato. That's Nicholas Miller.
I'm Nicholas Miller. Yeah.
So as there you go. And
I'm really thrown off by this remote thing. Sorry.
It is weird. No, it's weird. It is actually quite uncanny. It's not how we normally do things. And as a result, you know, we, like the rest of Kaechung and like everyone else on Earth, you know, have to change things while this virus sort of works its way through the population. As this curve gets flattened, as they hope it will.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, and if anything, you might wonder what's the point of a talking show when, if you can't have a guest. Which I think
well,
is
there's
fair.
All sorts of talking that happens remotely these days.
Exactly this. And also, I figure, you know, if anything, it's nice to just think about what's going on with someone else. You know, when you are practicing social distancing, sometimes the interior monologue builds up a little too strong, and you don't get that sort of... reflexive feel you get from hearing other people talk.
Very
so
true.
So for me this is nice, I have to say, and then hopefully it's nice for you as well, Nicholas. And I also have
always
to say
nice.
Though that maybe it's also helpful to you, the listener, to just hear how other people are doing for a change, when so much of the time you've been just thinking about how you're doing, which isn't a slur at all, but more just sort of like, I think we're all trying to sort of metabolize what this will mean for one. How are you doing, Nicholas? Things are okay with you?
I've been trying to take it day by day, but today has been fine. I find myself escaping into... commercial advertising work.
Yeah.
In part because it's something I know how to do and I can execute it without a ton of self-reflection.
Uh-huh.
And I also don't know how long that'll last.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a very hard time focusing on anything. I guess I feel like if the situation were to change suddenly, which seems like not an unreasonable assumption that the situation may change, what would be the one thing I would regret not having done today? So I'm always worried, like, should I go on a long bike ride? Should I be doing something else, basically? And, you know, if I just knew that it was like, no, you're going to be inside, that's it, like, that's truly it, you cannot. It is illegal for you to like get out there, then I would have to say like, oh, well, you know, then I guess I should just focus on, you know, performing these tasks, doing this work. But as it is, I find it awfully difficult, to, to pick one thing to do, or I'll do one thing. Like I'll go to the store. Like I went to Central Market on Friday, which for our generally Californian listenership is like a fancier Texas only Whole Foods. And even though nothing in Texas gets busy like anything in California normally does, you know, like the Costco doesn't have many people in it compared to the Costco in Atwater Village, or, you know, you go to a Trader Joe's at 6:30 and it's pretty busy, but it's not the same thing as going to like the Silver Lake Trader Joe's and feeling like you're in like, some sort, you know, like that episode of Game of Thrones that was just all one long battle.
Yeah, the Battle of the Bastards. I guess there are a lot of episodes like that.
There's like, especially as the series went on, they did a lot more elaborate set pieces. But it's just, you're in one of those episodes where you're like, I'm going to be in this Trader Joe's for literally an hour. And there's people coming, there's people and things and carts and stuff coming from literally every angle. You cannot be prepared for anything. There's like every phase of liquid, vapor, liquid, solid, all the stages of matter are sort of activated simultaneously, just like floating around inside, and you're you know, you're cut loose with your basket trying to find nuts.
And the place where they serve the tiny coffees is just useless.
It's just like a rotating sort of circle pit gyre of humanity. And Right. So like, you know, that's called a Wednesday night at Silver Lake Trader Joe's. And that's kind of the same level of busyness as at Central Market the minute that panic buying had truly set in Texas. But then the anxiety is different. You know that if you screw up on a Trader Joe's run on a regular Wednesday, that, you know, if it's really bad, if you needed it tonight, you can just turn the car around and go back there and face it again. But you kind of really feel like you have to like shoot a swish, you know, like you gotta get it all in one go. So like I'll go to the grocery store and then I'll just be emotionally drained because you're so concerned that, you know, did I get it? What should I get? If the things I desire are unavailable, what are some can I make a smart substitution? Is there something that I've forgotten that I'll regret forgetting, you know, later? And then you have to deal with, you know, those are your internal anxieties, and then those anxieties are refracted through literally, you know, an entire store's worth of people who are all dealing with that same sort of emotional charge in really different ways. And that's really alarming, I think. Like that's why it's so draining. This woman in line behind me had a cart full of nothing but fresh shellfish.
Yeah, top of the list for pandemic buying.
Yeah, something that will literally last for only 2 days. Just insane.
Maybe she read something that it helps build immunity against COVID-19.
Yeah, I'm sure if you just shovel rancid oysters into your face, once the vomiting subsides, you know, like once, I'm sure you're good for everything. I can't imagine. Maybe she was just crafting some sort of special poison to, you know, take out her entire doomsday cult or whatever. Is there like a
special anxiety in Austin about it? Because as far as I understand, it supposedly derives from, it jumped from bat to human, right?
Right.
So is there
interesting?
Because there's a lot of pride about bats in Austin. I was wondering if maybe there's that pride has inverted or perverted into like a mass anxiety about the bats.
I guess I hadn't thought about it. To the bats' credit, I think like a thing that's protecting the local bats, I think, is that it's not bat season.
Oh yeah, true. So they're like, they have a really good alibi. They were in Mexico.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm sorry about your pandemic, but it couldn't have been me. I was clearly
we were in Mexico.
Down in Cabo. Yeah. So
for
I
our
think
extended spring break.
I think that is it. I think, you know, the bats are like, no. My plans were just as disrupted as yours. I was trying to come back and it was just impossible. It was impossible to get a flight. But yeah, no, there is this, like, there is an amount of this kind of anxiety. And I mean, I've always had this glib answer to health problems in America that, you know, if something really bad ever happened to me, I just get on a plane and go back to Canada.
Yeah.
And now that's kind of less and less likely as well, you know, like, mm-hmm. like they just closed the border. And I mean, I'm a Canadian citizen. I'm sure they would be bound to accept me, but under what terms or in what circumstances, you know? And if they shut the border to sort of tourism and sort of frivolous travel, you know, I imagine there's not many flights leaving to Toronto from Austin. You know, there aren't that many in the first place. So, yeah, it feels weird to be separated from some of these like primary fallbacks that I had, you know, sort of very smugly relied upon living in America, I guess. So that's a little, you know, creates a little bit of anxiety as well. How's your panic buying been? Have you bought anything amazing?
Ella got way ahead of the curve on that one. And she started ordering weeks ago. But I think like my friend Chris Carlton put it well. He's like, even those of us, not me, but Ella and Chris, who got way out ahead of it, it wasn't like you knew what to buy.
Right.
So we have like 400 boxes of rotini.
It's a good pasta. It's a good shape.
Yeah, it's twirly. It's fun. Now we're like, well, we should have gotten some meat and frozen it, things like that, you know.
You know, I think our
I do have one funny purchase that I can share. So Ella's birthday is on Saturday. I know we talked about having a party months ago. That's not going to happen anymore.
No.
So I bought her a very nice piece of ceramic from a ceramicist in Milan, and they shipped it. And so it got shipped out like during like peak Italian Corona. And it arrived today from FedEx, and the woman who was holding it in FedEx with gloves on was like, "How dare you?"
Yeah, right. I have a...
it's like, I didn't know. It took like 4.5 weeks to ship. I had no idea.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's, I mean... Ella's
like, I'm not sure I want that.
Yeah, that's true too, right? Like, it doesn't matter how nice it is. It's like a poisonous item. We should probably wrap things up, I guess. And okay. Maybe we'll do this again next week. But I have a similar story. So... You know, we're in this nether realm here in Austin where, you know, many things are shut down. Like, for example, all bars are closed till May 1st.
Incredible.
Which is a long time from now.
Yeah.
And so they're boarding up all the bars. And Austin is pretty much just like a long strip of bars and nightclubs. Like, this is what it's known for. You know, you have like you have a bar, you have a stage, you have musicians, and this is what happens. And if you're closing your bar for that long, you know, you're not going to let people vandalize the front, you know, you're not going to show up and sit inside your workplace and do nothing, you know, you're going to stay home. So they're boarding up the front of all the bars and it looks crazy. So things like that are happening and it feels wild to see that, you know, but then on the other hand, you know, you can go to AutoZone and buy auto parts, you know, you can... you can't go into the restaurant, but you can get takeout, you know? So lots of things are, you know, you see people biking around and stuff and there are people around. And so it's hard to tell sort of how serious, you know, the sort of range between serious and unserious seems really hard to read visually, you know? So I went to the Velo Way, which is a sort of closed course cycling track used as sort of a training place for road cycling. and I like to go there often. And because the kids are out of school and everything, there are these large family groups there, and they're not going very fast. Like, there's pretty much two kinds of people who use this thing, sort of retirees and people with children who are sort of rambling around, and cyclists who are, you know, going blazingly fast or trying to go as fast as possible. And so, and the division between those things is pretty stark. There's not a lot of middle ground. So I'm on the fast end of this thing, and I'm trying to round this large family group, and in a bunch of tight corners, it's actually kind of hard because, you know, the sort of gyroscopic force of going into a turn means that I kind of, you know, if you're going fast, you kind of need width on the road to handle turns safely. But then, you know, a large family group in the slow lane makes the lane much narrower. So it's like, it's a complicated negotiation, and I generally try and get by them as fast as possible without being like totally terrifying, you know, without like dive bombing a pack of children or something. And as I round this corner and this family group, you know, my mouth's open, I'm panting, and this fly shoots right down my throat. And the inevitable thing that happens when like a fly punches you in the uvula is you start coughing. And because I don't have any underlying respiratory conditions, I'm merely trying to get this thing that like sort of shot into my throat out. It is a dry cough. And so I'm like coughing and hacking and going like 35 kilometers an hour. And this family is like horrified, and I'm just flying past them, and I try and rinse it out with my water bottle. And so I'm like gargling and cough gargling and like water shooting out of my face, and it's a droplet borne contagion. And I just feel like the worst person. I feel like this family is like horrified. And, you know, I'm sending the most neurotic member of that family into like spasms of fear. and I, you know, I mean, it's one of these things where it's like your totally innocent Italian ceramic is like now the locus of just raw terror. what a time to be alive. Anyway, shall we wrap up the show then?
Yeah, let's introduce the guest.
All right. That was wonderful. The guest is coronavirus.
Yep. Thank you, Corona, for being here. We will have you on the show every week until you...
Go away.
Find your way home. All right.
Wow.
Goodbye, everyone.
Good night.